As we're studying tonight, we're going to be talking about some folks that were friends and that spent time together, no doubt socialized together, and yet needed to learn the things that the master teacher had to say. Now, in our last study, we were studying from Luke chapter 10, and we were talking about the Good Samaritan. I had lots of computer problems in that study, and I appreciate those of you who delayed your evening to be able to pursue that. But we were talking about the Good Samaritan and his question, desiring to justify himself about who my neighbor is. He's correctly answered the questions that the Lord has asked him about what the law says, that the law says that we are to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and our neighbor as ourself. And he prompted then the question, seeking to justify himself, who is my neighbor? And the irony of this whole thing, we've all studied the Good Samaritan, no doubt, told the story to our little ones so many times, and we're familiar with it. But the irony, I think, is as we come to the conclusion of it, when Jesus raised the question, who showed himself or proved himself to be neighbor to the man that fell among the robbers? And this lawyer responded by saying he that showed mercy on him. He didn't even identify the man as a Samaritan, wouldn't call him by what he was, just simply he that showed mercy. And Jesus said, go and do likewise. Now, interestingly enough, that's the answer to his question, because his question was, what shall I do? And Jesus said, you need to do something. And what you need to do is what you correctly said. You need to prove yourself a neighbor. And in doing so, you prove your love for God. And then the story changes in verse 38. And that's where I want to begin our study tonight. It says, now, as they went on their way, he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at the Lord's feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving, and she came up to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister did leave me to serve alone? Bid her, therefore, that she help me. But the Lord answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful. For Mary hath chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. I want to spend a little bit of time in our study tonight talking about Martha and Mary. And I want to see if I can get my charts to load up here. And here's the text that we're studying tonight. Two or three things that I want us to notice. We don't know what village. The Bible doesn't tell us what village. It was likely Bethany, because that's where Martha and Mary and Lazarus lived, just out of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem and Bethany were not all that far apart. In fact, the last week of Jesus' life, we know that he stayed in Bethany and frequented the city of Jerusalem. So he was in Bethany at night and Jerusalem by day. So likely the village that is being discussed very well might be the village of Bethany. But we are told about this certain woman who is named. Now, one of the things that we do note on that is it's different from what Jesus told about the Good Samaritan. Because when he speaks concerning a certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, he's not named. And then a certain priest, he's not named. And then a certain Levite, he's not named. And then a certain Samaritan, he's not named. So this seems to be a very common occurrence of people traveling on this road and even being beaten up and robbed. So the giving of the names of the characters does not necessarily add anything to it. It helps us to see that this was simply a story that Jesus is telling to help this man understand who his neighbor is. But in verse 38 and following, the characters are specifically named. There was a certain woman named Martha. We have no reason to doubt that this is not the Martha and Mary, the sisters of Lazarus, that we read about in John chapter 11 and 12. And so we want to take note of where they lived and the occurrences of the things. But we want to make a comparison as we study. Now, I have the reading of the passage on the board, but we just read it from the text, so I'll pass beyond that chart. But I want to note that we have a contrast taking place here. Now, there are other passages that we could reference on this, and we'll spend a little bit of time in John chapter 11. But we know that Jesus sometimes went out from Jerusalem, spent time in Bethany, as we just mentioned. But these two sisters, Martha and Mary, turn in your Bible, if you will, to John chapter 11 and John chapter 12. I want to notice some things specifically from those two chapters as we talk about these two sisters and the contrast that appears to be made between them. In John chapter 11, first of all, we notice beginning in verse 1 as it's introduced, now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, of the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And it was that Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Now there are some things that we learn about Martha and Mary and even Lazarus in this connection in the 11th and 12th chapters that are not revealed to us in our text of Luke chapter 11. And so we won't spend a little time just identifying the characters. I think that's helpful when we're engaged in any Bible study to see what the Bible as a whole tells us about the characters in the context that we're studying from. But we know that in our text, in verse 38, that Martha received Jesus into her house. Now, in John chapter 11, we note, beginning in verse 5, it says, "Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus." Now that tells us that Martha and Mary, and including Lazarus, though he's not part of our study tonight from the text of Luke chapter 10, Jesus considered them very, very close friends. They were just really close. Loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus. And when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he abode at that time 2 days in the place where he was. Then after this, said unto his disciples, "Let us go into Judea again," and so forth. We're familiar with the raising of Lazarus from the dead, though it's not our purpose tonight to talk extensively about that particular aspect of the equation. We want to talk about Martha, and that brings us down in John chapter 11 to verse 21. John chapter 11, verse 21. In verse 21, it says, "Martha therefore said unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hast been here, my brother had not died." Now, I don't know whether to take that as an expression of confidence in who the Lord was, or to take that as a criticism of the Lord not being there, that her brother perhaps could have lived if the Lord had gotten there sooner. You can take that and do with it as you like at this point in our study. But Jesus said to her, to Martha now, verse 23, "Thy brother shall rise again." Now here's what I want you to note about Martha. "Martha said unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Now notice, if you will, in verse 25 and 6, Jesus said unto her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth on me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whosoever shall liveth and believeth on me shall never die. Believest thou this?" Now, Jesus is talking to her about the resurrection in that last and great day. And she's well aware that the Lord has expressed some things that she believes is true about the resurrection in the last day. Verse 27, she said, "Yea, Lord, I have believed that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, even he that cometh into the world." And when she said this, she went away and called Mary, her sister, secretly, saying, "The teacher is here and calleth thee." And she, when she heard it, rose quickly and went unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha met him. Notice another thing about Martha. Martha has gone out to meet Jesus. And upon learning that he has come to, or intends to come to their village, she tells Mary, "The master is here. Jesus is here. The teacher is here." And you'll note again in verse 31, "The Jews then who were with her in the house and were consoling her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up quickly and went out, followed her, supposing that she was going unto the tomb and weep there. Mary, therefore, when she was come to Jesus, saw him, fell down at his feet." Note that. Mary fell down at his feet and said unto him, "Lord, if thou hast been here, my brother had not died." Notice that Mary said exactly the same thing that Martha said. But when Jesus saw her weeping, verse 33, the Jews also weeping who came with her, he groaned in spirit and was troubled and said, where have you laid him? And they said unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. The Jews therefore said, behold how he loved him. But some of them said, could not this man who opened the eyes of him that was blind have caused that this man should not die? And Jesus therefore, groaning in himself, cometh to the tomb, and it was a cave, and a stone lay against it. And Jesus saith, take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time the body decayeth, and for he had been dead 4 days. And Jesus said unto her, said I not unto thee, that if thou believest, thou shouldest see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou heardest me, and I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the multitude that standeth round, I said it, that they may believe that thou didst send me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. Now, if you drop down to verse 45, many therefore of the Jews who came to Mary and beheld what that which the Lord did, believed on him. Now, that's really about all we've got at this point about the relationship of Martha and Mary and Lazarus and Jesus. But put these two accounts together and let's talk about Martha and Mary. When we read in Luke chapter 10, we've noted that Martha received Jesus into her house. We've noted in John chapter 11 that Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And we note that in the 11th chapter that he loved Lazarus as well, but Martha believed in Jesus, and she believed in life after death, and she was willing to tell others that Jesus has come. Now, another interesting point that I did not read, and I should have while I had my Bible open to that text, in John chapter 12, there in verse 2 and 3, it says, so they made him a supper there, and Martha served. But Lazarus was one of them that sat at meat with him. Mary, therefore, took a pound of ointment of pure nard, very precious, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Now, we've read a number of things about Martha and Mary, enough to make a very vivid contrast. And though we see some of these very complimentary things about Martha, we also see some things about Martha that are not very good. We know in Luke chapter 10 and in verse 40 that the Lord gave a very, what I'll call a mild rebuke to Martha, that she was cumbered about much serving. She's anxious, Jesus said, about many things. She's distracted. And this is of particular interest to me. In both cases, when we look in John chapter 11 and in Luke's account in chapter 10, she presumes to advise the Lord. Do you find that interesting? She places herself kind of in the position to tell the Lord, this is what you should have done. And in the 10th chapter of Luke, she tells the Lord, tell my sister to help me. Bethany?
Yeah, before we get too much farther, you need to look at verse 22 to go with verse 21 in John 11. Martha said, if you had been here, my brother had not died. But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will grant you. Yeah. So she's not really like advising him or rebuking him. She's saying he wouldn't have died at all if you had been here. But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, he'll give you. So Martha, in what Jesus says, you know, do you believe this? And she's like, I believe you. I believe this and all of that. Martha has a lot of faith.
Yes, she's I don't want to be overly critical.
Yeah, she's just very different from Mary. Their personalities
very, very different.
Yeah.
And interestingly, go ahead, Daphne. I'm sorry.
Well, and it's interesting that Christ deals with them each according to the way they are, as opposed to having just one standard that they both have to, you know, do this specific thing. He deals with Martha with her personality, and he deals with Mary with hers. So
that's right. And they're different. We've got to say that. And we do note in verse 21 of Luke, John chapter 11, that you see almost the same words in verse 32 spoken by Mary of John chapter 11. So to that end, they've said the same thing. But coming from the different personality Yes, I don't want to fault Martha and make her appear as an unbeliever, because she believes the Lord. She believes in the Lord. She believes he has the power to raise her brother from the dead, if that be his desire to do that. But I think it's interesting when we see a contrast, as you pointed out, in their dispositions or in their personality. Though her comments about Lazarus and her confidence in the Lord to do what he wants to do regarding Lazarus, this rebuke, and I don't know hardly how to see that in any other light. In verse 40 of Luke chapter 10, Martha was cumbered about much serving, and she came up to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister did leave me to serve alone? Bid her, therefore, that she help me. Now, she's wanting the Lord to arbitrate the matter, the difference between her and her sister. Now, that calls upon us to try to talk a little bit about this difference between the two. Now, yes, there are similarities between them, but what is it that is so markedly different between them? Well, it's interesting to note that as we read about Mary, Mary of Bethany, she's seen three times in the gospel record. And all three times, what is she doing? I think this is fascinating. She's sitting at the feet of Jesus, listening to his word here in our text. She fell at his feet in John chapter 11 in verse 32. And she came to his feet and poured out her worship, putting oil and so forth on Jesus' feet and wiping his feet with her hair. Now, do you see Martha doing any of that?
No.
No, you don't. You don't. Martha is trying to be a good host. Martha is upset, even with Jesus, that Jesus seems to be accommodating Mary sitting at his feet as if she's doing nothing. And what we want to note is Mary is not sitting at the feet of the Lord doing nothing. Jesus very simply says, Mary has chosen the good part. What is Mary doing at the feet of Jesus? And that very expression, at the feet of someone, what does that indicate? She's honoring him.
She's honoring and worshiping him.
She's worshiping him, and she's listening as a student.
She's doing reverence.
That's right. She recognizes him as the one qualified to teach her, and so much on a pedestal, she needs to be at his feet and listen to what he has to say. And I think this sets forth the difference. You know, when we look at the expression in verse 41, I see in Luke chapter 10 this to be a gentle rebuke, because Jesus said to her, Martha, Martha. Can't you just hear that? You can't say that hardly any other way, can you? Martha, Martha, thou art anxious and troubled about many things. What's on Martha's mind?
She's actually worrisome.
She's worried. Yes. She's anxious. And that's interesting to me. But what's she anxious about?
Her sister.
Her sister. Not helping her prepare something for Jesus to be a good host, to express hospitality. Now, I think it's important here that we make a mental note of this. That Martha, she loves the Lord. The Lord loves her. Martha is confident in what the Lord can do. She believes that all he has to do is say the word and he can raise Lazarus from the dead. She believes in what the Lord has promised concerning the general resurrection and eternal life. So we've got a lot of positive things here about Martha, but Jesus points out a very significant difference in where their interest lies. Martha believes the Lord, she, from a spiritual standpoint, very complimentary, but Martha, you're anxious and troubled about many things. What are you troubled about? I want my sister to get over here and help me with these physical things, to be a good host. Now, question, is it wrong to be a good host? Well, no, that's very important. You know, we were talking before our study started about the importance of our being together and our association together. And the study that I had this morning, we were discussing that in some detail, how great it is to be in each other's home and to be able to participate in hospitality and rub elbows with somebody that you care about. These things we've missed over the past years or past year. These things are not bad. These are really good things. And Martha is concerned about implementing these things. But what's her sister concerned about? What's Mary's point of interest?
It seems like she's more concerned about her soul.
And
making sure that she's taking care of Jesus.
She is. She is. She's concerned about spiritual things. Now, I wanted to talk with you just a little bit about this statement that Jesus makes to her. Martha, you're anxious and troubled about many things. Now, we have a tendency to be that way, don't we? Somebody did a survey. I don't know the source of this information, but about 40% of the things that we worry about never happen. I thought that was interesting. About 30% of our worries are about the past, and what can you do about that? About 12% of our worries are about what other folks think of us. Now, I know to some degree that may be contingent upon how old we are. But 10% of our worries are about our health, and 8% of our worries are about real problems that we're likely to face. Now, Martha didn't have a problem. She thought she did. She thought that her sister needed to be up helping her to prepare some kind of hospitality things for the Lord. But Martha is mistaken. Jesus said, your sister has chosen something that's good. She's made a wise choice, and I'm not going to take that away from her. So what about Martha? You're anxious and troubled. Let's notice that Jesus is not forbidding our giving thought to things that regard hospitality. Martha is not way off base about being concerned about entertaining Jesus. He certainly would be an honored guest in her home. And granted, yes, we must provide for our families. That's important. We need to give thought to our physical bodies. That's important to us. And there's nothing spiritually virtuous about taking a don't care attitude that turns into just being negligent and sloppy. There's nothing to be praised about that. And as a matter of fact, that very attitude is condemned by the wisdom writer in Proverbs 6. But anxiety that distracts from service to God, brethren, is sinful. Now, whether that be about honorable things, I want to spend just a moment of time in our text from Luke chapter 14. Turn with me to Luke chapter 14. In verse 15, it says, "And when one of them that sat at meat with him heard these things, he said unto him, blessed is he that shall eat bread in the kingdom. But he said unto him, a certain man made a great supper, and he bade many. And he sent forth his servant at supper time to say to them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. And they all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I bought a field, and I must needs go out and see it. I pray thee, have me excused. And another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee, have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. And the servant came and told his lord these things. Then the master of the house, being angry, said unto his servant, go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city, and bring in hither the poor, the maimed, the blind, and the lame. And the servant said, Lord, what thou didst command is done, and yet there is room. And the Lord said unto the servant, go out into the highways and hedges, and constrain them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say unto you that none of those men that were bidden shall taste of my supper. Now, we could talk about being constrained and all of that. That's beyond the scope of our study. There's lessons in that we'll just have to pass over for tonight. But what I want to note is the excuses that these offered for not coming to this great feast. The first said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. was there anything wrong with buying 5 yoke of oxen? Or, I'm sorry, the first said I bought a field, and the second said I bought 5 yoke of oxen. Anything wrong with either one of those things? Well, there's nothing inherently wrong with either of them. And then the third one, I've married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. Now, granted, Paul said that the man who doesn't provide for his own, he's denied the faith and worse than an infidel or worse than an unbeliever. Is it good to give attention to expanding your farm operation to provide for your family? Well, yeah, that's a good thing. Is it good to plan maybe I need to buy a new tractor to be able to efficiently, more efficiently farm the land that I've got? Yes. Oh, that's all fine, well, and good. Honorable in and of itself. Is it honorable for a man to take a wife? Well, provided it's not adultery, yes, that's a good thing. The Lord designed this marriage relationship and called it in Hebrews 13 as an honorable relationship in the sight of all. So here's something in all three of these instances that is not only approved as a good thing, but we're at fault if we don't do these kind of things to provide for the things that we need. So why did the Lord become angry in this text? Why did the master become angry and say, go out and bring in folks from the streets? Why were these good and honorable things a problem?
They didn't put the Lord first.
Did not put the Lord first. Kind of like Martha, isn't it? Beth Ann?
Yeah. I mean, it says here that these people were the ones he had invited. So they knew it. They knew what time it was. They knew it was coming. They knew who was doing it. And at the last minute, they're like, no, I'm going to do this other thing, which is rude even today to do something
like that.
So this wasn't a spur of the moment thing on the master. He had already prepared it and they knew it. And they just at the last minute didn't come. So
and what do we know about Martha and Mary entertaining the Lord? Did they know who he was?
Mm-hmm.
Did they know what he offered?
Yep.
Yes. And Mary, 3 times, we find her sitting at the Lord's feet, listening, worshiping. And what do we find out about Martha? Though that she has so many very good, commendable qualities, she's anxious and troubled. She's cumbered about much serving. To her, this is more important than sitting at the feet of the Lord. Like buying a piece of property, buying a new tractor, or marrying a wife. When any of these things that may be right and honorable in and of themselves, and we could give a laundry list of the illustrations at the point, but when our priority is to seek those things instead of worshiping and honoring and listening to the Lord, we are anxious and troubled about many things. We may have some commendable qualities, but we've missed the mark. We've got to make a decision. Now, I want to talk with you just a little bit about I'm sorry, Bruce, go ahead.
You know, looking at verse 15 of this same story, back over in Luke.
Luke 14, verse 15.
Verse 15.
Okay.
Talking about the kingdom of God.
Right.
And so they're not really looking at how important it is to be there.
No, and neither was Martha. And therein is the problem. Therein lies the problem. Martha has made a poor choice. Not necessarily a wrong thing to do. It's not sinful for her to be a good host. But the problem is the choice that she's made. The problem is a matter of priority. She's selected the wrong thing. Now, what does the Bible say about the very kind of thing that Martha is so anxious and troubled about? In Matthew, the 6th chapter, in the early days of Jesus' preaching, we turn to the Sermon on the Mount. And in Matthew, the 6th chapter, all of us, I'm sure, we've studied this at great length. And in the 5th chapter is where the Sermon on the Mount actually finds its beginning. But in the 6th chapter, dropping down in that text, right in the middle of things, in verse 25, Jesus said, "Be not anxious for your life, what ye shall eat, what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than the food, and the body than the raiment? Behold the birds of the heaven, that they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, and your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are not ye of much more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add one cubit unto the measure of his life? And why are you anxious concerning raiment? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. Yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God does so clothe the grass of the field, which today is, tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? Be not therefore anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after these, all these things do the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of all these things. But seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Be not therefore anxious for the morrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Jesus, very plain. Don't be anxious about temporal things. Now, is he saying that to Martha? Well, yeah. Does he say that to us? Yeah. And one of the things that we note in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus points out this is just contrary to nature itself. Consider the lilies of the field. They don't worry about what they look like, what they're going to put on. Consider the sparrows. They don't gather into barns and they don't have to worry about what they're going to eat. So being worried about temporal things, that's contrary to what we see in nature. God takes care of his creation. It's contrary to godliness. In verses 31 through 33, it expresses somewhat of a lack of faith and confidence in God. Well, God knows that you have need of food and clothing and shelter. Don't you have any confidence that God's going to provide for you? And then what are we to seek first? Now, I must grant you that years ago when I first started preaching, I believe I missed it on verse 33. I would quote the verse, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness and all these things, speaking of temporal things. You won't lack for them. They'll be supplied for you. But I had identified the kingdom as the church. Now, I know that in some instances, in fact, many, the kingdom and the church, they're talking about exactly the same thing. But in this passage, I want to suggest this little addendum to you, that you can't seek first the kingdom without seeking first the relationship with the king. Now, that's just where that is. So we're not talking about let the church be first. Seek his kingdom. You can't do that unless you seek the king first. Does that make sense? He has to have first place, and there's a reason for that. He won't accept anything else. It's first or none. Now, Jesus, in speaking to Martha, 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 you're anxious and troubled about many things. Mary has chosen the good part. What is it that Mary has always done in the three instances that we read about her? She has sought the king first. She's been at the king's feet every time we read about her. Do you find that impressive? She's got that part right. And the Lord said, I'm not going to rob her of that. It's also contrary to our confidence that God will provide. I'm not going to look at all of these passages, but simply this one. We notice in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5 that God won't ever fail us. He won't ever forsake us. And we need to find contentment in that. Now, Martha, she's anxious and troubled. She's everything contrary to the word content. She is not content. Another thing that I want us to consider is from the text of Matthew chapter 6. There's a great deal more to, as we have on the board, an abiding faith in God than just believing in the existence of God. When Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6, verse 30, But if God does so clothe the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you? And then he said, O ye of little faith. What is it that God has promised? He's promised you seek me first and all these things. I'll take care of that. Now the question is, it's not a matter of believing in the existence of God, but it is a matter of believing what God said. And I think that's very clear in this passage. O ye of little faith. Why? Well, you're worried about the physical things of this life. You're anxious about those things. God's already said, I'll take care of you. You're going to have the things that you need. Oh, you might not drive the finest automobile and live in the biggest house and wear the finest clothes, but you'll have what you need. Now, if you don't believe that that's so, then the reflection is you don't believe what God said. Now, you might believe that God exists, but you don't believe what he's promised. Now, Abraham believed God in Romans chapter 4 and verse 3. As a result, what did Abraham do in Romans chapter 4? He had a son. Here is a man that is in his ripe old age, 100 years old. And what did he do? When God said, Abraham, you're going to have a son, and you're going to be the father of a great nation, and through this son, all families of the earth are going to be blessed. And I don't mean to be crude, but what did Abraham and Sarah do? Both of them, the Hebrew writer tells us, believed what God said, and what did they do? Now we might say, well, the miracle was in Sarah's ability to conceive. Well, perhaps so. But I want to suggest to you that Abraham and Sarah came together and made a baby just like folks do. That's what they did. And why did they do that? Because they believed what God said. Now, if I've missed it somewhere there, you correct me on that. They believed what God said. I'm sorry. I can't even hardly see Bruce. Go ahead, Bruce. I've got you guys, by the way, kind of shoved over into the corner, and I could just see about half of Bruce. Sorry. Go ahead.
It just reminds me of the scriptures, that we should present ourselves as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God. For that is our reasonable service.
Well, that's true. Yeah. You do that. And why do you do that? Because you believe what God said. You live this kind of life because you believe what God said. And we see further evidence of that in a number of passages. And the question simply is, where is your faith? Or, O ye of little faith? And what must we learn? We learn contentment. I'm not going to go through a number of these passages, but they're impressive to us. Paul wrote the Philippian letter from a Roman prison. And what did he say? I can do all things in him that strengtheneth me. What was his concern? Well, I've learned how to have plenty. I've learned how to have nothing. And in whatever state I'm in, I can be content either way. And this passage in a study several years ago really made an impression on my mind. When we study about Leah, I think most of our emphasis in Genesis chapter 29 and that immediate context, most of our study in that context is about Rachel. Would you agree with that statement? But there's an interesting presentation of some things that I'm not sure that we've wrapped our minds around. And that is what we learn about Leah. The text tells us that Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. But we learn in the beginning that Leah thought by the naming of her sons, we learned this and what the names meant, that she thought in the bearing of children that this would cause Jacob to love her. And just let me ask the class, did Jacob ever love Leah like she wanted to be loved? No, never did. And as we come down to the tail end of things, we find out that Rachel was really not as nice as sometimes we think that she was. She was beginning to blame Jacob because she couldn't have children. And Jacob said, who am I, God, that I can make you have children or not? No, he couldn't do that. And then with the birth of the first child, she wanted to have another one. And it appeared that wasn't going to happen. And then finally it did, as they were journeying to Bethlehem. And the thing I find rather interesting about Rachel and Leah at that point was, where was Rachel buried when she died? She was buried alongside the road leading to Bethlehem, just alongside of the road. And with the naming of the children of Leah, with the last son that was born, she named him a name that indicated she wanted to be honored. And where was Leah buried? Anyone remember?
Where Sarah was buried. That's where, right. Abraham was buried.
That's right. So she was honored in the sepulcher of the fathers. Leah was buried alongside of the road. Now in all of this, what do we learn from Leah? Makes a fascinating study. We learn that Leah learned not to be anxious. Mm-hmm. She learned to be content with a status in life where she would never be loved like she wanted to be loved. Wasn't going to happen. But she learned what it was then to be honored. Though Jacob didn't love her like he loved Rachel, he did bury her in a place of honor. Now, you say, well, what's that have to do with what we're studying over here about Martha and Mary? Martha had not at this point learned what must be the very most important. We may never get what we think we value. We may not ever have that. But Martha had the Lord in her house, and he was there to teach. And Mary recognized that. And she sat at his feet and learned. Now, what was it that Martha wanted? Lord, make her help me serve. That's not what's important. She's made a wise choice. And Martha, you're worried about the wrong kind of things. And don't we sometimes spend a lot of time doing the same thing? We're anxious and troubled about many things. Now, we need to learn to communicate with God in prayer and cast our anxiety upon him. I'm going to, because of sake of time, pass beyond some of these things. But what we've got to do in this equation, and we learned this from Martha and Mary, is we've got to learn what's important and focus our thoughts to that end. Now, for, again, purpose of time, I'm going to stop sharing our slides right there, and I want to look at some passages. Turn your Bible, if you will, to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. In Colossians chapter 3, the apostle writes, beginning in verse 1, "If then ye were raised together with Christ, seek the things that are above where Christ is, seated on the right hand of God." Now keep in mind, at the time of our text, Jesus was in the house of Martha and Mary, and Mary sitting at his feet listening to him. Well, now Jesus has ascended to the right hand of God. Where is our mind? Is it in the same place that Mary's was? Or are we caught up on the many temporal things to where we don't have time to study, to pray, to serve others, to worship? We don't have time for these things because we have become anxious and troubled about temporal things. Seek the things that are above. Set your mind on the things that are above, not on the things that are upon the earth. I've talked with folks sometimes and tried to establish this point, that if you're too busy to serve the Lord, if you're too busy to take time with your children, your wife, and do these kind of things, then you're just too busy. Would you agree with that statement? You're just too busy. And maybe we've got the same problem that Martha had. She was busy about serving. Not that serving was a bad thing, but the point of her emphasis was in the wrong place. And sometimes we're guilty of that. Jesus talked about that in Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 19, about where we lay up our treasure. He said, lay up your treasure in heaven. Why? Because if you lay it up on this earth, what's going to happen to it? Moth and rust will consume it. Thieves break through and steal it. But if you lay up your treasure in heaven, then it's something that will not ever go away. You can enjoy your reward. Now that's the lesson I think that we need to take home with us. I had some other things on some of the charts, but I think you get the point that Martha had a problem. She had very many commendable qualities, but the focus of her attention was in the wrong place. Let's not be guilty of that. Give due attention to the right things, but even the right things, they have their place unless sift out what needs to come to the top. And that is our service to the King. That's got to be first and foremost. Nothing else will suffice. Any questions or comments?
I got one.
Randy Childs, go ahead.
There's a couple of other places, in Luke chapter 7, beginning in verse 36. A woman who was a sinner and she was reclining at the table and she brought an alabaster vial of perfume and began wiping his feet with her tears and with the perfume. And of course that ends at the end of chapter 7 when he said to the woman, your faith has saved you, go in peace, after he teaches the Pharisee a lesson about that. The other place was in Matthew 26, beginning in verse 6. Jesus was in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, and a woman came to him with an alabaster vial of very costly perfume and poured it on his head and reclined at the table. Now, neither of these women are identified as Mary, but it seems like it could be.
Well, it's possible. Yeah, it's certainly possible. I don't think that the passage in Luke 7, I don't believe that that passage is talking about Mary. Not the Mary that we're talking about. And here's my reason for that. This woman is described as a sinful woman. And we don't see that characterization of either Martha or Mary or Lazarus. They were very close friends of Jesus. And, in the instance of, Luke chapter 7, this woman's sins were many. I don't think that the description of this woman that anointed Jesus would fit with the Mary that we're reading about in Luke chapter 10, different woman.
I was trying to figure out where he was. It's kind of hard to tell in Luke 7. The last place that he was in Maine, quite a bit further north.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But the one in Matthew 26, it says he was in Bethany.
Yeah, it could likely be. I don't know. But it's not, as you said, it's not named. Yeah. Just not named. It could be possible.
Okay. I just didn't know if you knew any more than I did.
No, I don't know that we'd have any way of identifying the name of this person.
Again?
Matthew 26.
No, 26, the one where it talks about Lazarus.
Oh, yeah. That's John chapter 11.
John 11. And 12. Okay, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, because it says something in here. Oh, yeah. All right, so down in John 11... in verse 2, it says, now it was Mary who anointed the Lord with perfumed oil.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And wiped his feet dry with her hair.
Yeah.
And it was her brother Lazarus who was sick. So there it identifies Mary as being that one.
We know exactly who that one is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know that we could identify the one of Luke 7, not named. Except from the standpoint, she's a very sinful woman. So be that as it may, Randy, did you have a thought or a question about that beyond the identity of this woman?
Well, I guess what caught my eye was in John 11 when it says it was the Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair. His brother Lazarus was sick. That hadn't happened yet in John.
No, not in John's account, no.
In John's account, that doesn't happen until chapter 12. So I was thinking, well, maybe that had happened before. That was what the reference was made to. And so that's why I went looking, well, maybe there's a different account in a different book.
And well, keep in mind that John, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
I was just going to say it could possibly be the one in Matthew 26, except that that's just before his death. So I don't know. Yeah. Confusing.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind too, and I know that this point is confusing, that John is not recording events necessarily in chronological order. Now that sometimes throws us for a curve, especially in our study of John. John is not necessarily recording events in chronological order. And so in John chapter 11 in verses 1 and 2, when he identifies this Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick, let's not make the mistake by assuming that because it's in chapter 11 that it has already occurred in somewhere in chapter, the scope of chapter 1 through 10. Because as you come to John chapter 12, look at what it says in verses 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And Jesus, therefore, 6 days before the Passover came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom Jesus raised from the dead. So they made him a supper there, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at meat with him. And Mary took a pound of ointment, pure nard, very precious, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. Now, the event that's recorded in chapter 12 may be the event that John records and is referencing in John chapter 11. It just hasn't happened yet.
That makes sense. It's not chronological like Luke is.
No, no, Luke tells us that the things he's writing are in order. John does not tell us that. He just tells us events, and we don't know exactly on the timeline some of the events we can. But to know that it occurred in this order from the account of John, that would likely be a mistake on our part.
Or it may have happened more than one time.
That's possible too. Yeah.
Because that was a thing they did when somebody came in from a journey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was common.
That may have just been Mary's job, where Martha's was something else. So.
And you see Jesus doing that in John 13 with the disciples' feet. So yeah, you're right. This was a common occurrence in those days. Just something to think about. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, hey, Mickey.
Yes, Bruce.
In John chapter 12, verse 4, you know, where doesn't that kind of let us know that in Matthew chapter 26, it's basically about the same timing?
Yes. Oh, yes. In fact, if you'll note, in John chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, as we read a moment ago, it says, Jesus, therefore, 6 days before the Passover came to Bethany where Lazarus was. Now, to put this on a timeline, 6 days before the Passover, this was the last Passover that Jesus observed with the disciples prior to his crucifixion.
Right.
So that puts us on the timeline of the events of John chapter 12. And yes, Judas Iscariot, who was going to betray him and all that, we read about that in Matthew 26. Now, the thing that I want to impress you with is the account of John is that we have some landmark passages that do help us with the timeline. Mm-hmm. When we come to John chapter 12 going forward, the rest of the book of John, from John chapter 12 going forward, is the last week of Jesus' life. Now, what does that tell you about John 1 through 11? As the events that John records, they're progressing extremely rapid.
Mm-hmm.
And so from John 12 going forward, we've got a more detailed listing of the events of Jesus' life than we have in John 1 through 11. Because the Gospel of John is not intended to be a detailed chronology of the life of Christ like Luke is. Luke tells us, that's why I'm writing. John tells us, I'm not writing for that. What I'm writing for is to provide for you evidence of who Jesus is, and you can read that in John 20, verses 30 and 31. Does that help, Bruce, to kind of put it a little bit better on the timeline for us?
Oh yeah, I was just basically just agreeing with what Randy was saying.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah, I think you've got a parallel from John 12 to Matthew 26.
Yeah, in Matthew 26, they say that you know that after 2 days, the Passover is coming. So this even seems to be maybe a third time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is, and by the way, Brenda, excellent point. When we read of the Passover at this point in Jesus' life, it's from John's account that you can read of four separate Passovers. And I think this is very significant. In John chapter 2, verse 13, John chapter 5, verse 1, John chapter 6, verse 4, and then John chapter 13, verse 1 is the last mentioned Passover. And so being as we've got four specific mentionings of separate Passovers, we figure from John's account how long Jesus preached. And from that, we determined that he preached about 3.5 years when we put the spaces in between these Passovers. It helps us to identify the length of time that Jesus preached. That's just a trivia question if you ever run across that. Only the Gospel of John does that for us and helps us to identify that with any degree of certainty. Any other questions or comments before we close? Before we close, looking at the names that I see, we're so thankful that you're with us, but if we can help you in any way, spiritually, that's certainly our desire. If someone may know of someone or have information of someone that is in need to obey the gospel and willing to do that, desires to do that, if you can communicate that with us, we'll be happy to help in whatever way we can, or if we can help you by praying with you and for you that your sin be forgiven, you be restored to a state of righteousness in God's sight, and that's why we're here